Welcome to Alternate Reality. You're listening to episode 388, Comic Book Review.
Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned.
Hello and welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
I'm Charles.
And we're here this week to talk to you about everything going on in the world of just a handful of comics. Not in all the wide world of comics, because as Charlie pointed out moments before we started, I don't read very many.
That's not what I was pointing out. I was pointing out you're reading the same thing over and over again.
Well, that's the point.
I don't want it to get stale.
I appreciate what you're saying, and this is a thing that I've struggled with.
I don't care if you're reading DC. I don't care if you're reading Marvel. But don't, like I said, Dust, don't pick Avengers 684, 685, 686, 687, 688, 690.
I appreciate that. And it was so much easier back when I was reading 20 issues a week. There was a plethora of things.
You're not going to guilt me into this.
I'm not guilting you into anything. I'm just telling you what my circumstance is. My circumstance is my comic budget is very limited. And unless
all these old books he says he has, and he's just like, no, I'm reading everything new this week, last week, whatever.
People don't want to hear about Superman number 75 that came out in 1994.
They might want to hear your opinion about it.
But I didn't read that this week. I read other things.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's talking about that issue you're talking about this week.
As things come out,
nobody's talking about Superman 75, except for that guy who does the whole Superman podcast.
So everybody knows that I'm a DC fan, I'm a Superman fan, I'm a Justice League fan. You know, these are my big heroes, and I read some Marvel stuff too. I'm currently reading Avengers. I'm trying to catch up on Thor and Spider-Man and stuff like that. Although Charlie's going to tell me this week why that we need to just leave Spider-Man alone now.
I didn't pick Spider-Man.
No, but. You had thoughts about that that you expressed on Twitter and stuff, that this was the last issue of Spider-Man that you needed to read. So,
well, just because I don't want to see Nazi Spider-Man saluting Hitler.
I don't know anything about that.
Nick Spencer is writing it.
So he's not going to turn Spider-Man into a Nazi, is he?
He made Captain America a Nazi, didn't he?
You don't think he's going to do that to every character he writes. So, but that's, we're off the topic. The topic is...
But yet they're going to have a Spider-Geddon, where like he's running off of Dan Slott's Spider-Verse. Hey, let's have all these Spider guys in the Spider-Verse fight each other now.
Didn't we do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
this is the guy who wrote Morning Glories.
Yeah.
You remember that book?
I'm vaguely, yes.
You remember how it went 30 some issues and nothing happened?
Yes. I remember somebody that we were associated with loved that book.
Oh, he still loves.
No names. No names. But anyway.
We're not going to dare to say it this week.
No, not this week. But my point is that my comic budget is much smaller, so I don't get to read as much, and so I'm limited to the characters that I really like. So I'm reading a lot of Superman and Justice League and Thor and a couple other things. And that's just all I have room in my budget for. So the trouble is, when I come in to do this podcast, if I'm not careful, I'm going to be talking about this week's issue of Superman again this week and next week and the week after that. So there's a real struggle to not do that. And so that's kind of what I'm up against. So I'll get there. Just give me some time. I got some catch-up reading to do before I can diversify.
Catch-up.
You know, you're such a negative Nancy. Your real pleasure... I think I remember now why we stopped doing the stupid show. It's because I can't stand to be around you sometimes.
Yeah. You know, the sad thing is, I was like, man, am I the only one that hated Solo? Because everyone else loved it. It's like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to all of nerddom. And I'm like, you know, that name thing was the stupidest effing thing they could have done. No, man, that movie was really good.
Charlie's sour grapes that everybody likes Solo but him. That's not what we're here to talk about either. And you said
last... We talked about that last episode.
Well, you said that, yeah, that is in the feed. If you want to go back one episode, you can hear our review of Solo, a Star Wars movie.
See, what I'm doing is I'm
you're promoting the
brand.
Yeah, promoting the show from within the show. Good job, Charlie. So anyway, I will do my best each and every week.
You said something about
the... Oh, I was going to say that during that said review, you indicated that there were some things about the movie that you liked.
Yeah, there were a few.
Yeah, so it's not total, you know, F-storm.
You know. It's better than Last Jedi.
Well, yeah. It wouldn't
way
take...
Way better than Last Jedi.
Way better than Last Jedi, no doubt about it. And I would say it's as... Didn't we do this last time? Yeah. I don't remember. So
reviews.
Okay, let's not get into that. That's all last episode. Go listen to that.
See, all right. See how I cut you down?
Yeah, you did. Thank you, Charlie. Charlie's like my show producer. Like, he's the guy in my ear off to the side, except you can hear him. But he's the guy like, cut it short, cut it short. Move along to the next topic. So.
Who the hell put the exclamation point at the end of that sentence? Welcome to California.
California. All right, so.
Ron Burgundy. I love that.
We're going to be back in just a moment to talk about comic books. They came out this past week, or not, whenever they came out. And we'll see you there. So just a second, we'll be right back.
Boar, your valor has touched my heart. Oh yes, there is still some small part of me that knows mercy. I will end your pain. With something special I've been saving for just this occasion. I'm going to carve out your heart and put it on a pike in my throne room.
As much as I'd enjoy seeing that, first you've got some business with me. Sorry it took me so long. I had to go get my power suit.
All right, we're back to talk about comics this week, and we've got a bunch of reviews to do for you. Don't want to take up too much time, so let's get directly into it.
Straight directly?
Straight way or directly. It's directly.
I'm screwing the queen.
Charlie, you had dissented... Number 30, is that right? Descender. I wrote that wrong. Descender.
After that 5-minute conversation we had on how to spell it, you still screwed it up.
I wrote it wrong.
Shocking.
Descender number 30.
I love this book.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why I love this book.
Tell me why.
I just realized it today, right?
Okay. You didn't love it for 29 episodes.
No, I just realized why I loved it.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember... I don't know, Doctor Who, right?
Well, yeah, sure.
Like, for 60 years, they've just done, like, aliens and weird crap they had hanging around. And that's what this book kind of feels like.
Okay.
Because it's just like, oh, yeah, we got a race of robots, and they all look different, and one guy's got a pie plate for a head. And I'm like, that's awesome!
It looks like it was done with cheesy special effects.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what this could be. This could be, like, one of those 60s like British TV shows,
right,
or something like that, which they made like weird creatures all the time.
Or even some kind of Saturday morning American kids thing.
Either way.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Star Wars too, because like in this book, the main like story of this book is that there was this scientist on Earth like 1,000 years ago, because this takes place way into the future.
Right.
And he creates this artificial intelligence. But the thing is, this artificial intelligence, he travels out in space because he outlives his maker and decides that his maker was flawed, right?
Right.
So basically, he saw God and went searching for answers because he didn't like the God that made him, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when he goes out traveling, he meets this other race of super intelligent aliens, right?
Right.
And they're the basis of the whole background. But the thing is, he starts his own, like, robot empire, right? And, like, 60, 70 years ago, they all attacked the humans and killed them. Like, killed a bunch of them with these big, huge robots that they called Settlers, I think.
Manhunters.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Threshers, yeah. I think the harvesters. Okay. They're called harvesters. And the thing is, like, they found some of those harvesters, like, when they got attacked, the humans did, years ago, and started making robots again.
Right.
So they made this, like, this one guy, his name is Quan. He's, I don't know how, like, remember Dr. Arcady from the Transformers cartoon?
Right.
The guy that worked with Megatron?
Mm-hmm.
He was crazy, and he, like, had, like, the metal head, and he had the cyborg arm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy is, like, on this guy's intelligence, but he gets the cyborg parts later on, so it doesn't really matter. It
reminds me of that guy from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that Shredder had working for him that had the fly features.
What was Baxter it? Stockman.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing. That's what this guy is. But he created, like, the last line of robots that these harvesters used, right? And he made them a lot like the harvesters. Well, in the beginning of this book, the harvesters come back. They're going to fight the humans again. And the humans are, like, all mixed with aliens and stuff. Like, the girl that's on the front of it, her name is Telsa, which is really hard to read.
Okay.
Because if you see the word T-E-L-S-A, what do you want to read it as?
What? Spell it again?
T-E-L-S-A.
Telsa?
No.
Would you say T-L or T-E?
T-E-L-S-A.
Telsa.
Yeah, that's her name.
Okay.
But if you see it spelled out, what does your mind think of?
Tesla. Okay. I had to think. Sounds like that?
But yeah, it's like every time I see her, it's like, it's Telsa. Well, she's the daughter of the, like, the Human Empire's army, like, in space. And they're called the UGC. And she's part alien.
Okay.
And her father is an older white guy, right?
Right,
and
sure.
She's a blue-haired, she's a blue-skinned, red-haired alien.
Oh, okay, cool.
So she's like, and the humans are mixed with aliens. That's what I wanted to get a point. But the robots that the Quan guy made, the scientist guy made, they destroyed all of them except for one.
Mm-hmm.
And the one was left on a mining colony like 50 years ago.
Okay.
So when the robot armies that started coming in to kill the humans again came back, they had to find the TIM-21 so they could fight the guy. And that's when we see the boy Andy that is like the best friend of the cyborg kid.
Right.
And it's TIM-21 and Andy. Oh, and it's like Battlestar Galactica too. That's another thing I was thinking about. Well, the thing is, it's like Andy had to leave, like, in the mining colony, like, years before. So Tim has been on this planet for, like, decades. At least, like, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically the story of Andy, who's now, like, a bounty hunter. Like, a smuggler.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
What would you call him? A scruffy-looking nerf herder?
A rogue, a scoundrel. Yeah.
And it's funny because he
tried around with a big hairy guy.
No, but it's a big like reptilian guy.
Oh, okay.
Called Initian, who looks really weird.
Okay.
He's basically mostly mouth, and that's it. But anyway, it's about them, and how TIM-21 gets found by Telsa and Quan to, like, help save them, but then they're attacked by the robot army, and the leader of the robot army, like, has another version of TIM-21, which they call TIM-22, and it turns out the TIM-22 is like the evil version of TIM-21.
Oh, okay.
And it's great because it's like he's got, like, red hair and TIM-21's got brown hair, and like the, like, TIM-22, like, even, like, switch places with him.
Okay.
At some point, so, like, they thought TIM-21 was there when he was being groomed by the, like, the robot leader. Who's funny because, like, he called TIM-22 his son, but they're, like, totally different. Like I said, this dude looks like a pie plate head, and TIM-22 looks like a little boy. But the thing is, it's like takes all these stories and it puts them like on this path to where like Andy doesn't know that like Tim 21 still exists.
Right.
And they've been away from each other for like 15 years. They've never seen each other. And December 30, they meet up again. And when it's funny because when Andy sees Tim, he's like, "Oh, Tim 21, how's it going?" And Tim 21, seeing his best friend after like 25 years, like runs up to him and hugs him. He's like, "Andy, I'm so glad to see you." And I was just like, "I'm crying." And that's the thing. It's written by Jeff Lemire.
Right.
And I'm not reading any of his Marvel stuff, which is probably
I've heard that his Marvel stuff is pretty good. Like he graduated from doing his independent stuff to DC, and it's like at DC he struggled for a little while.
Yeah, but he was doing good work.
But he was by the time he came out. But when he first got started, I mean, you remember when he was writing Sweet Tooth and stuff like that, and it was just.
Well, I think that was still part of his.
Well, no, that's creator-owned, don't get me wrong.
But what I'm saying is I think that was part of his
growth.
Creator-owned Vertigo stuff.
Right.
That he wanted.
But that was his first stuff at DC.
Yeah.
Then they started bringing him in on the superhero stuff, and it wasn't as good because he hadn't really exercised those muscles yet. He was all about writing small, personal stories about people.
I don't think they put him on the right books when he first started because wasn't he writing Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, or whatever that book was.
I forget exactly what he was on.
But then when he took over for Scott Snyder on Swamp Thing, and when they put him on Animal Man, those were great books.
Like I said, at some point he figured it out,
yeah.
And he got better.
Yeah.
So by the last I heard anybody say anything, the stuff he was doing at Marvel now is really good. So he's a writer that's clearly had a strong progression from where he was just writing small personal stories on his indie stuff to somebody who's able to write big epics now for the superhero stories and stuff.
But another reason why I like this is because it's done by Dustin Nguyen, who we were talking about last week, because of the Paul Dini detective run. And like in this book, he goes like full on, like artistic and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's a sci-fi thing, so. You know, there are a lot of white backgrounds, there are a lot of black backgrounds.
This book looks like it's colored over pencils. Doesn't look like there's any ink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like that, I think.
That's becoming more and more of a thing these days, especially with now that they color with Photoshop. It's easier to color over pencils than it used to be, and they don't need somebody to come in and do dark, heavy ink lines. But some books still have inkers, but a lot of them don't anymore.
I'm not sure. I'll have to look, but I don't know if he does or not. No, he doesn't. He does all the art by himself. But I love this book. Because, like, it's funny because they're, like droids. Like
droids.
It's Star Wars, you know, it's like they're droids. And, like, one of them is a mining droid. Mm-hmm. And his name is Driller. And, like, his big thing is he's always, like, Driller is a killer. And that's like his big thing. Like, that's what he says.
He's got a catchphrase.
Yeah, he's got a catchphrase.
That's cool.
Like I said, it's an excellent book. I recommend anybody reading it.
Okay.
Because, like I said, it feels like Battlestar Galactica, Star Wars.
Anything in that vein.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. That it?
Yes.
All right. Moving on. You know, so the big talk last week was about. And actually, for the last few months,
Bendis is coming.
Well, Bendis showed up at DC, and his first issue of Man of Steel is out this past week. And without saying anything about Bendis, let me first talk about Yvonne Hayes. Or Ivan Reese, or depends on. I've heard it pronounced a couple different ways. My understanding
is he's South American, so I think he pronounces it Hayes.
Yeah, my understanding is Yvonne Hayes is the correct pronunciation. I could be wrong. Anyone's welcome to correct me if you know better than me. But his art on this is fantastic. It is gorgeous. I mean, this, like I said, this picture of Superman.
Well, he was doing good things on Aquaman before he left.
Right.
And he did the Green Lantern stuff.
I mean, I would love to have a large print of that. That is just amazing. That particular page, it's a full page spread of Superman flying, holding two villains, as he flies that he just captured.
Did he drop him out of the sky?
No, he didn't. That's the joke, though.
Oh, really?
They're making a Batman joke at that particular moment. Go, you're not going to drop us, are you? And they go, he goes, no, why? He said, Batman does. He said, it's always funny when Batman does it. So,
well, Golden Age Batman used to shoot criminals, so yeah.
But like I said, Yvonne Hayes, I really became aware of this guy's stuff back when he was working on Green Lantern for the Lantern Corps Wars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He was doing all that stuff, and I loved that. And he draws Superman much more young-looking than a lot of artists do. If you'll notice that his Superman looks like he's 24, 25 years old versus a lot of people that draw Superman.
He should be 35, but then again, because now he's older. Yeah, he's older than Bruce is now.
Right, yeah, just a little bit. And so, well,
because he's the same Superman.
Right. Like, see, here's another one where he looks particularly young. You know, and so he draws a very youthful-looking Superman. Not childish. You know, not like he's, you know, 18 or nothing.
Oh, you mean like, who's the guy who did the Superman Origins?
Oh, I don't remember.
With Jeff Johns.
He
always makes Lois Lane look like, what's her name?
Margot Kidder. Oh, you're talking about, is it Gary Frank?
Yeah, Gary Frank.
Yeah.
He made
and so
Superboy look like he was Superman with Superman.
With a little boy body. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So the artwork on it is gorgeous. Some of the panel layouts are really well done. Just really gorgeous art. Yvonne Hayes is a modern day master, I think. And I would love to have some artwork from this guy. All right, so that brings us
good luck.
Well, yeah. That brings us to Bendis' storytelling. So, you know what I love about comic books, Charlie?
What?
Is I love it when comic books takes and introduces a character and they tell me...
Do you read it like that, or you go panel to panel?
It depends.
I always go panel to panel.
I try to go panel to panel, but there's some... We're talking about the Comixology app. And
I read mine sideways.
You got a couple different ways you can go at it. You can either... You know, if you've got an iPad, which is what I read mine on, then the iPad is just a tad smaller than the actual comic book page. So you can read the whole page at a time and just flip between pages. Or Comixology has got guided view technology, which will take you panel to panel, word balloon to word balloon, and sort of like leafs you through the story.
I kind of needed that if you read Amazing Spider-Man 800 this week. That would have been nice to have read that on.
Yeah. Well, was it confusing?
Yes. Panel.
Panel layout was confusing?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But we're not talking about that book.
Yeah, because Charlie said it wasn't worth reviewing. So,
the has already argued with me that it wasn't, so yeah.
But we weren't going to talk about him, remember?
Dang on it, I did mention it.
Jeez! We're going to have to start paying him.
Bleep it out.
I will. All right, wait, I got to make a note. What's the timestamp? It's like, okay, like 35 minutes. All right.
You go, beep.
Anyway... So you know what I started to say, you know what I love, Charlie, about comic books? I love it when they take and they introduce a new character, but then tell me that character has always been there.
Oh, retro continuity.
Yes, retro continuity.
Retconning.
Yeah. So the big new bad that we're getting introduced in this series is to a big bad guy, and his name is, Rogal Zar. It's so...
He showed up in the, DC...
Yeah, the preview stuff they put out.
Yeah, it wasn't their free comic book day. It was their 25-cent thing that came out the week of free comic book day.
Yeah. So this guy... So we initially flashback to Krypton many years ago. I don't know if that means 100 years ago, 400 years ago, 4,000 years ago. They don't say.
Many, many years.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. All right, and so you see this guy, this bad guy named Rogal Zar, who's appearing to some kind of intergalactic council. I don't know who these people are, except, you know, this one guy who's clearly, I don't know if it's Ganthet, but he's clearly a guardian of the universe.
Well, if it's not Ganthet, it's probably the one who went bad.
Kronos? No, that wasn't his name. What was it?
Krona,
yeah. But there, I don't know who the rest. Like this guy, I think is from Ran. I think
He ran.
But I don't know who this guy, this bearded-looking fellow, is. It looked like he's like a Norse god. I have no idea who he is. This other guy who's got on Scarlet Witch's headdress, I have no idea who he is.
Well, he must be a new god.
And this person who has like frost giant features, I have no idea who he is. Did
they not explain who?
No, they're just some kind of council, and he's pleading with them. But they're clearly like some kind of cosmic guardians of some kind. And he's
some
pleading.
Guardians of the galaxy?
Not exactly. I don't know. But he's pleading with them about Krypton and how Krypton is an unchecked evil in the universe. And that Krypton must be stopped before they override everything and destroy everything that the whole rest of the galaxy has worked to produce. And the council says, well, we'll think about your words and we'll get back with you. Okay, so then we flash forward to Superman.
You are deemed guilty.
And Superman is just sort of running through his day. He picks up a couple bad guys. He takes them into jail. One of them is Killer Moth. Another one is Firefly. Oddly enough, Batman villains. Who are hiding out in Metropolis because they feel like it's safer than Gotham.
Well, you know what's funny?
What?
I was at the comic book shop the other day. And I saw like a Conan issue. It said Attack of the Killer Moth. I was like, Killer Moth in
and Conan?
It was just like a big moth.
It was like
creature.
Mothra or something. Yeah.
I was like, that's awesome. And then I was like, no, that sucks.
So the idea is that they were hiding out in Metropolis because they had checked and Superman was off planet or something, and they thought it'd be a safe place to hunker down for a while.
Hunker down.
I don't think I said it wrong, but you know, anyway.
Hookers.
Charlie's like, hookers? Where?
Turtles and...
They get into a disagreement, and like Killer Moth is threatening that he's going to kill Firefly. He's like, you can't say those kinds of things in Metropolis. He's always listening. Those kinds of words draw him. He's attracted to those kinds of things. Now, the idea is that Superman... This is a Bendis thing now.
I was going to say, are they afraid of Batman or...
No. They're in Metropolis. So the idea is that in Metropolis, Superman hears everything the time.
They've kind of subtly said that he does.
Yeah, and so he hears everything all the time. And while he's not necessarily paying attention to you, certain key words catches his attention. If he hears somebody...
Bomb.
Bomb.
Bomb, 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 bomb.
Oh, just a song. My bad. You know, if he hears somebody scream, hears somebody cry for help, hears somebody yell fire, those kinds of things. Or if he hears somebody say, I'm going to kill you, or come here, you grappity old hag, I'm going to smack you around.
Though, boy, I cannot drive in Metropolis.
You dirty mother ever! Superman, here, Superman standing on Charlie's hood. There seems to be a problem. No, sir. No problem. He just cut me off. Well, let's try not to get upset about it. So, basically...
Who are those guys with the technology?
What technology?
In Superman's Metropolis.
Oh, Star Labs?
No, the bad guys.
Oh.
We're always running.
Intergang? Yeah.
I'm going to go to Intergang. I'm going to start shooting everybody.
So, anyway... So, after Killer Moth is really upset and he keeps threatening him, about that time...
Is it the old Killer Moth costume? Because they redesigned that recently.
No, it must be the new one because he's in some kind of weird outfit where he's got like two pistols or he's holding at this guy. It almost looked like
it's not the one they made.
I thought for a moment they had the word balloon switched because that almost looks more like a Firefly costume. Because he's got tanks on the back and stuff. So if that's the case, if they do have the word balloon switched, that might be a little weird. I don't know. Or they've put Killer Moth in for Firefly and vice versa. I don't know. Because that looks much more like a... Because
they showed up recently in the All-Star Batman, and he, like, dramatically changed their costume.
Yeah. So I don't know. But anyway. So, anyway, Superman does sweep down. He does pick him up. And he takes him to jail, basically. But this Superman's a little more quippy than Superman I'm traditionally familiar with. So I'm like, no, Ben, let's not do that. Let's not make Superman into Spider-Man. Let's not have him exchanging a lot of witty banter with the criminals, because Superman just doesn't do that. But there was just a quick exchange like that. It didn't make a big deal out of it, so I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. But here's Superman hovering above the city listening. There's a throwback to this. It kind of looks to me like the Brandon Routh Superman in Superman Returns, how he hovered
Except
above.
He's not hovering above Lois Lane's house where she's happily married.
Right.
As a kid.
But if you recall in that movie, he also hovered above the city and listened for people. So that's kind of, I think, where that idea comes from. There's a big four-alarm fire in the city. Superman swoops in, saves a bunch of people, puts the fire out. And then he meets, like, the new chief fire detective.
Well, it's
whoever, the forensic fire marshal or whatever that comes around and investigates fires and tries to determine if there have been set or, and apparently there have been a rash of fires. And so he's looking through the wreckage.
See the fire? I see the fire.
And he's looking through the wreckage of the building, and he's looking for something that may have started the fire, and he seemingly can't find anything.
You know who I know who didn't start the fire?
Who didn't start the fire?
Billy Joe.
Really? Well, he didn't start the fire. It was already burning.
Since the world's
But anyway, so he meets a new character.
John Alfrails, Charlie Alfrails Jones.
But he meets this new character who's this, like, fire marshal chick. Her name is Melody Moore. And it's clear. God,
really?
But, yeah, that's her name.
Another mnemonically person, like.
Alliteration name.
Yeah. Like
Lex Luthor, Lana Lang, Clark Kent.
Well, he was dating that mermaid for a while. Her name was
Lori Lamaris.
Yeah, Lori Lamaris.
Yeah. So her name is Melody Moore, obviously, yeah, because all people of interest in DC Universe have to have names that start with the same first letters. And
maybe she's a bad guy.
Well, I don't know. She may be the one setting the fires. Who could be? But it's clear that Bendis is setting her up as a repeat character because he goes through way too much time and energy to meet her, find out who she is, and learn a little something about her.
Yeah, you fight fires. I'm on to bigger stuff.
And so as she...
I fight real crime.
Yeah, they have a pleasant exchange, and as he flies off...
She shoots him with Krypton.
As he flies off, she went, "And nice to meet you, too." And then he kind of glances over her shoulder at her, and she goes, "Oh, that was stupid. He's got super hearing." And
it'd be funny if he flew back and said, "I'm married."
Listen, I can't be fooling with you.
Look, I would, but...
So the scene shifts back to long ago, but not as long ago, like sometime later. And this Mogul Czar, whatever his name is. Rogal Czar. It's hard for me to remember. He's fighting some kind of giant creature on this planet that he lives on, and the guardian, the Oa guardian, comes to visit him and says, "We've debated your plea about what to do about Krypton." Start to say the Krypton.
After those thousands of millennia later.
Well, no. I mean, apparently it was only a short time after his original plea. They just flash back, but it's not as far back. It's
like a week later.
It's like a week later, right?
Couple days.
And so he says, "What are you doing to that creature?" He goes, "I'm defending myself and providing meat." I said, "Well, you're not, why aren't you living someplace nicer?" And he goes, "Well, because the war is coming and I've got to stay sharp. This is the best place to hone my skills." And he goes, "Okay, whatever. Anyway, we've considered your plea and we've decided not to do anything about Krypton." "What? Why are you allowing them to remain unchecked?" And he goes, "Well, they haven't done anything yet."
Yeah, I was going to say, here's my question.
Yeah.
Do they answer why he's got a mad on for
Krypton? They don't. They have. All. I have no idea what Krypton has done to make this fellow so mad. But apparently it's something horrible. I don't know.
Well, it couldn't be as bad as Doomsday.
I don't know. But basically they're saying that Krypton actually hasn't violated any of anybody's space. They haven't invaded anybody. If anything like that happens, we'll be the first to act. But until then, we're going to let them continue to grow and hope they develop into the kind of people that they could be. So apparently, I think this is well before Krypton's destruction. I don't know how far before, but some time before. Because I think because if you recall, by the time Krypton is close to destroying, they have a strict policy about venturing out into space. They don't allow it.
Yeah.
And he's talking about he's afraid that they're going to infringe on all the galaxies around them. And like they're spreading like cancer. So there's clearly a difference.
Venereal disease.
Whatever. STDs of some kind. There's clearly...
They're the Viltrumite
hepatitis,
race.
Hepatitis, whatever.
They're the Viltrumite race.
So there's clearly a difference in Krypton's approach to intergalactic trade and things at this time frame than there is at the time that Superman's born. Because it's a complete reversion. Now, what causes that reversion, we've never established, and we don't know what happens. But he's furious that they won't do anything about it. And so you just know he's getting ready to take action into his own hands. We just don't know what yet. So we flash back to the Daily Planet. Superman's writing up a story about the fire. Chief gives him a hard time about the story's not really interesting, and he says, but Superman was there. He said, fine, we'll put it on page 5. And Superman goes home. Jonathan is upset because he's grown out of his Superboy costume. They're going to have to make him a new one. And Lois is on the phone trying to line up some kind of interview.
Maybe we met each other for 1,000 years.
And super
growing pains, get it?
Yes, I do. Lois is on the counter, sitting on the counter. I don't know, that's kind of inappropriate. You know, you don't want a kid to learn the bad habits. She's sitting on her counter in the kitchen on the phone trying to line up some kind of interview or something with somebody. When suddenly there's a flashing of light from behind Superman. And she goes, Clark. And John goes, Dad, what is it? And he turned around, the page just fades out white. And we don't know what it was.
Oh, no, an infinite crisis right in the middle.
So that's where it ends. I will say this, my interest is piqued. I think that Bendis can be a good storyteller, although sometimes he gets really weighted down in character dialogue and things like that. Hasn't done that yet.
Well, usually it takes him like 6-7 issues.
Right. But...
After 6 issues of this and nothing happens.
You know, if I get a 9-panel grid of talking heads, I'm out. You know, I mean, that's too much. But here...
John's like, there's 7 here.
This is a weekly series. I think it's 6 issues weekly. Yeah. Is Yvonne Hayes the artist on all these, or are they rotating?
I would imagine so.
Well, then they would have had to have already had these in the can for some time.
I don't think he's been doing anything recently.
So as long as he's the artist on these, I'm loving it. I don't even care if Bendis could just leave the words off the page. I just look at the art. Because Yvonne Hayes is that good. But the story, if I'm going to evaluate that, I will say I'm intrigued. Let's see where it goes. He didn't give me enough. Really, not a lot happened in this issue. I would call it deconstructed storytelling or you know, they really stretched it out and put over... A little happening over a lot of pages.
Well, you might want to say that when the third issue shows
decompressed up. Storytelling.
Not the first issue.
Not I don't know what I called it initially, but decompressed storytelling where they
yeah, I understood.
They really spread it out and they don't not a lot happens. So that's how I kind of feel about this first issue. So we'll see where it goes. I'm intrigued. I wouldn't say it was phenomenal and I wouldn't say it's the best thing I ever read. So but it's awfully pretty. All right, Charlie, Flash number 47.
You're probably not reading Flash.
I would like to. I just can't afford it.
And the thing is that Flash is probably one of the front-running books that DC's doing right now.
Mm-hmm. I love Flash as a character.
And the thing is, like, recently Wally has, like, shown back up in the DC universe. You know, that's what kickstarted Rebirth.
Right.
Because Wally jumped out of the Speed Force and, like, hey, look, come here.
Hey, remember me? No. Try really hard. Oh, now I do.
Well, the thing is, it's like that kind of what happened to Iris like a couple issues ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because while Wally has been hanging around, he hasn't been near Iris at all.
Okay.
He's been with the Titans and all this other stuff, living his own life, trying to hook up with his old girlfriend from the other universe. And a couple issues ago, he finally meets Iris. And she instantly remembers him. She's like, oh my God, Wally. I can't believe you're here. And like, it's been so long and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I remember our whole entire life together.
Right.
Which is crazy to me just to think like, once someone pops in that you've like never seen before and then instantly...
Oh, yeah. I remember you.
Like, your brain just, like, all these memories or whatever. Well, anyway, in the last issue, Professor Zoom comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't been there for a while. He's been normal. You know, because Hunter Zolomon is, like, a normal criminal forensic guy for, like, the FBI. Until, like, he goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, like, during the last issue, someone had been talking to him the whole time, going, well, you know what the Flash has done to you, right?
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Turns out it's Reverse Flash.
Okay.
So, Eobard Thawne's back in his life. And what they're doing is they're gearing up for this whole thing where Reverse Flash I keep screwing him up because Zoom is the guy who can travel in time. Mm-hmm. And Reverse Flash is just the fast guy in the yellow costume.
Right.
Well, anyway, Reverse Flash is trying to start like this fight between Barry and Wally. In this issue, they're fighting against someone, and like Wally and Barry are having this quippy like fight or whatever, and they're like, "Yeah, kid, if you knew what you were doing, I wouldn't have to be here." And he's like, "Yeah, but you remember that time I saved your butt back then, right?" And he's like, "Yep, I do. You were very slow there too, right?" And they're just like quipping each other, right? And it's kind of funny stuff, and it's really playful. Well, all of a sudden, like, Wally gets sucked into somewhere, and you don't know where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out he goes into the future, and he's in the Flash Museum, because in this continuity, in this Earth, the Flash Museum hasn't been created yet.
Okay.
So, there's a voice that keeps talking to Wally, and he's like, "Well, you know, the thing about you is, couple months ago you didn't exist, just like the friends you knew, the family you knew. And you know why that is? Because they're stuck in the Speed Force, and like you see Max Mercury there, you see Impulse there, you see Jesse Quick, like they're all there."
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps talking, he's like, "Even your wife and your kids are there." And he sees Iris and his two children.
Mm-hmm.
Not Iris, but his wife
Linda.
Linda and his two children.
Mm-hmm.
As young kids. And he's like, "Well, you know who's keeping all this from you, right? It's Barry. Barry's keeping this all from you." And it turns out it's Reverse Flash setting up this whole thing where you could have your whole entire life back as long as you get rid of Barry.
Mm-hmm.
And at the last page, it's kind of funny because Reverse Flash goes, "Yeah, I'm going to help you and we're going to get your kids back." And it shows Iris and Jay's costumes from when they were like superheroes.
Right. The Wonder
before
Twins.
Before New 52.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh man, it's going to be so cool." It's a great book.
Well, at least they're addressing all that past continuity stuff somewhere.
Well, that's the funny thing. It's like, are we going to get Max back? Are we gonna get Jay back? Because Jay showed up like in issue 22.
Mm-hmm.
Like he showed up for like a minute or two and like disappeared back into the Speed Force. I just want the JSA back. I don't care. And that's what I was hoping that the book that you're about to review, mm-hmm. right, was supposed to do.
What, the Justice League?
Oh.
No.
The next book.
The next book I'll do. All right. So first, let me get to Justice League No Justice number 3. Again,
we call it segue.
Yes, thank you, Charlie.
Not a good segue, because I screwed up the order.
That's okay. We appreciate the effort.
You know, if we had that other guy, you know,
you know, that third co-host that we just seem to be missing. I can't think of anybody that could fill that role, though. So, here's the thing. I've read the third and fourth one. I'm only reviewing the third one, so I don't want to get into what happens in the fourth one. But this I think this series has got some pacing issues, because we get to Kalu pretty quick, and then we spend a lot of time on Kalu spinning her wheels, not figuring out where we're at and what we're doing, or why we're there, or how to get away from there.
Well, I thought that was the problem, because Brainiac's not with them.
Right, it is. But you would feel like they would at some point move on, because they got another threat to worry about. You know, these things are moving from Kalu to Earth, and if we don't stop them here, then Earth is next.
As far as we know.
Right.
Well, as far as they've been told so
right.
far, that's what's going to happen. That so, may not be the exact truth.
So, either one of two things. Either either they're going to stop these things here on Kalu, or if not, Kalu's lost. And we fall back to defend the Earth. One of the two. And so, in this particular issue, there's still a lot of this bickering and infighting going on. And it's like they kind of have a general idea of where they're going and what they're doing, but they can't seem to agree on how to get there. And so Brainiac 2 is no help.
Well, of course not, because Brainiac 2 is an ass.
He doesn't care about them. No, he hates doesn't. Them all.
Yeah.
And he's like,
that was the best part about Rebels. He hated everybody.
And he's like, I'm not. He says, screw you guys. I never understood my father's fascination with you Earthers.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like he didn't care. Like, I mean, he did his job, but he didn't care about anybody.
Yeah.
He didn't care if they saved people or not. That was the best part. Real Docs is the world's biggest a-hole. The universe's biggest a-hole.
And so you've got Batman trying to lead his team, and you got Superman trying to lead his team, and all this stuff. Meanwhile, back at the Fortress of Solitude.
Meanwhile,
Amanda Waller and Green Arrow.
Aquaman's making a sandwich because he can't do crap.
This is going to make a good sandwich, Batman. Anyway, that's a John Caliendo, Frank Caliendo joke. I say he starts a John because he does the John Madden. Anyway.
He also does Jim Rome, the greatest.
I've got a fax. It's a real fax.
Real paper.
Anyway, sorry, inside joke. Anyway, back to Fortress of Solitude, they have stumbled upon the cosmic egg that will give birth to the trees that Brainiac has deposited here, ensuring that if Kalu fails, the trees grow on Earth and attract the, what are they, Omega Titans, yeah. The Omega Titans.
The Omega Titans.
The Omega Titans.
To Saturdays Earth. Saturdays on ABC.
And so, they can't, so, Amanda Waller just wants to nuke the thing. All right, I got a button. It will rain down holy hell upon us and everything around us, but this egg will be destroyed. We'll die, but millions will be saved. That's the price it takes, and she flips the cap up, and he gets ready to press the button, and Green Arrow starts shooting at her. No, 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 you can't do it. You'll kill us. Okay. Think of the larger picture, Green Arrow. No, no, it's environmentally dangerous or something. He comes up with some reason why she can't do it. The League will come through. They always come through. The League is dead, far as we know. No, 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 here's what we do. We got to get word to Hal. Now, if we combined all the Queen Industry satellites and all the government satellites and point them to deep space, I can get him on the comm link.
This must be a different Green Arrow, or he's bypassed all the crap that's happening in his book.
I don't know.
Because he doesn't run reading his comic. He doesn't run Queen Industries in his book.
So, well, maybe she just figures the government can hack him. I don't know.
Oh.
So he's fighting with her. She pulls a gun on him at one point, and he actually shoots an arrow down the barrel of the gun, and it like backfires in her hand.
Because I'm that good.
Yeah, and it backfires in her hand. She goes, ah, ah, ah.
Did you see that Saturday Night Live with Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye?
Yes, I did.
And he's like, well, I'm out of arrows. I'm done. He's
like, how many arrows did you bring? I had like 12. I had like 12.
How many aliens did you kill? 12. And you're welcome. I love Jeremy Renner.
So, the different teams are all but gathered around their trees. They're not having any luck destroying the trees or balancing the trees or whatever it is they're trying to do. And they're working together. They're feverishly trying to figure something out. At the end of the day, they've kind of come to the place to go, we don't have any choice. We're not going to make it. We got to get all these people, these Kaluans, off the planet. We've got to evacuate this planet.
Milana Kaluans.
And we've also got to get these planet nursery, because apparently they've got shrunken versions of a bunch of planets, including Tamaran.
That happened in issue 2.
Right. Including Tamaran and a bunch of other city planets, which is odd because I don't know how.
Tamaran was a planet, not a city.
It is. It's a planet. Did I say city? My bad. They've got Tamaran and a bunch of other planets all shrunk down into this cosmic nursery.
Starfire,
which is odd because Starfire, like, did she think her planet was destroyed? Did she not know what had happened to it? Because they've never addressed that.
I don't know. I'm not reading.
So, anyway.
Teen Titans.
So, they're trying to get the planets out of there, and Sinestro's like, you can't resize all these planets here. They'll all be right next to each other. It'll be chaotic space. Tidal waves and volcanoes and things like that on these planets.
Mass hysteria.
And they're cats like, and dogs, we don't have any together. Choice. If we leave them here on this planet, it'll be destroyed along with the planet. So Sinestro reluctantly agrees, and he's helping get them off the planet so they can be resized. Now they need time to get everybody away. Do you know who steps up to the plate? Who says...
Starro.
It is Starro. Starro looks at the Atom and says, you've got size manipulation technology in your suit, don't you? He goes, yeah. He said, can you make me bigger? And he says, yeah. He says, hit me with everything you got. He makes Starro bigger, and Starro is now almost as big as the freaking Millennium Giants. Not Millennium Giants, Omega Titans. Wrong people. Now, and so Starro's like, Starro is the most powerful. I mean, he really goes on a power trip. He's never felt this powerful. And he attacks these things.
Well, I like the way that, like, Snyder's been writing him. Like, yeah. He's just a megalomaniac.
Like, he's crazy. He's crazy. Drunk on his own power kind of the guy.
That's funny.
And so he gets right on the face, just like the little Starro things on the Justice League's face and all those issues. And he's trying to take it over.
Yeah.
And so he buys them the time they need. They all kind of get on their little ships and they're leaving. But unfortunately, Starro gets killed. The guy, the Omega Titan, rips Starro just to pieces off of his face. Alex, oh my God, Starro sacrificed himself for the greater good. This is like one of the greatest Justice League villains of all time.
Until you realize that Starro is a starfish and he can regenerate any piece from any
piece
that's been cut off.
He looks pretty dead. I don't know. Maybe. But anyway, they all basically get away just in time for the planet to be destroyed. And they're like, what do we do now? I don't know what we do. About that time on Earth, the other trees spring up. And so Amanda Waller's like, well, I hope you're happy. It's the end of the Earth, and it's your fault, Queen.
It's the end of the Earth as we know it. Yes, indeed.
So that's where the issue ends. Everything, there's only four issues, so it doesn't take a genius to figure out that they wrap all this up in the next issue.
Or maybe they don't.
Well, we'll see. They should, because we got Justice League number one starting the week after that. So you figure they're bound to get everything squared away by the end of the issue, surely.
Well, what I'm saying is, during, what was it, last year or the year before, when Marvel did their whole countdown thing.
I didn't read any of
that. Where, like, they were destroying the little pieces of the other multiple Earths. So they all came together for Secret Wars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, went through all, like, the Avengers titles.
Well, if they do wrap it up in one more issue, they've got a lot of work to do. So, like I said, it seems...
Oh, wait. It was Batman the whole time.
So what I'm saying is that it seems like this series, this four-issue mini, has kind of a pacing issue where they spent a lot of time running around not knowing what to do on Kalu, only to turn around and wrap the whole thing up in one issue at the end. It just seems... If that's the way they go, we'll know next week. I guess when because we reviewed every one of these, I don't see us missing that one.
I don't see you missing it.
then that'll be an odd. If that's the way it goes, or they don't spread it out into like continue to read Justice League to see what happens. If they don't do that, then it's wrapped up next issue. If that's the case, like I said, it's a weird pacing thing as far as I'm concerned. All right, Charlie, Jughead the Hunger number 6.
Okay, this is one of those fringe Archie books,
right? Yeah, they're mainstream Archie books?
Yes.
Okay. What are the difference?
Well, the mainstream Archie books are still the little
digest comics.
Yeah, the little digest comics that
sell in the grocery stores and stuff.
Oh, Archie missed his high school test today. Oh, what's he gonna do?
Oh no, Betty and Veronica both are coming over for a date tonight.
Yeah, those still happen.
Yeah.
Well, a few years ago, there was a writer, his name is Robert something or other.
I'm
not going to say his last name because I'm not real sure what it is, but it's a long, complicated name. Remember, we never can say a long, complicated
name. Yeah, we always get it wrong. So,
but anyway, he wrote this one issue of art. He started with these series of Archie called Archie the Afterlife,
mm-hmm.
where like the whole town of Riverdale was infested with zombies.
Okay.
So they've kind of branched off since then because they've done Sabrina, who's actually in the universe of that same universe.
Right.
But they've branched off a little more from that to where, like, this Jughead book is its own universe. And they have another one with Veronica.
Right.
Where Veronica is a vampire. So you know what they call that book?
Something to do with Vampirella, Veronica.
Yeah, it's Vampironica.
Oh, okay.
Which is hilarious. But this book, it's a werewolf universe book.
Okay.
And in the beginning of the book, Jughead is framed for a murder.
That he did not commit.
He didn't commit it. Yeah, okay. You're right. He's framed for killing Archie. But he didn't kill Archie. His cousin tried to kill Archie, right? So Archie's been, like, kind of thought dead for a while. So Jughead had to go on the run for a while. Well, it turns out his cousin, I'm not making this up, I guess this is an actual Riverdale thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what his real name is, but they call him Bingo. So Bingo's a werewolf,
okay.
Which I think's hilarious. Because Bingo is a doggy, B-I-N-G.
Okay.
Anyway.
There was a farmer who had a dog. And
Bingo was his name. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But turned out when Archie showed up, he was with Betty. And guess what Betty's family is?
Werewolves?
They're werewolf hunters.
Oh, okay.
She comes from a long line of werewolf hunters. So it plays nicely in the fact that they think that Jughead is a killer, and they're going after Jughead when Jughead knows that it's his cousin who's done the actual killing that he's being framed for, right?
Right.
All the killings in Riverdale that he's being blamed for. Well, in the last issue, Bingo kidnaps Jughead's sister, who I think they call her Peach, I think. Peanut or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, in this issue, he needs help. And well, the thing is that Bingo has recruited the other kids in Riverdale.
Okay.
So he's made werewolves of Reggie, Veronica, Midge, Moose, all the other kids that there are the other fringe kids. Well, in this one, Betty's about to kill, like, Jughead, and And Archie stops it. He's like, Betty, this is our friend. He wants us to help save his sister, right? And he goes, does this sound like a killer? Does this sound like a murderer? He says, but the thing is, the actual bad guys that are fighting have turned all of our friends into werewolves. And they're all evil now because they're trying to kill Jughead. I don't know why they're all evil. I don't think they would automatically turn evil once he bit him. I don't know. Maybe he's got mind control.
No.
They don't really explain that.
The evil bite.
They didn't really explain it, but it's funny because, like, they try to get into where Jughead's sister is, and Jughead breaks into this cabin. He's like, I'm here to free you. And he, like, takes off her mask, and she's like, no, you idiot, they're right there on top of us. And you see, like, five werewolves standing there about to pounce down on him. Well, it's funny because Moose is, like, running around, and, like, he's, like, the sentinel outside that they threw a rock to distract him.
Right.
And he's like, what was that noise? So he goes and investigates it, right, so Jughead can sneak through. Well, thing is, he sees a ball, like, going from... He's like, man, I'm not that dumb. He picks it up, and the thing splits in, like, five, six places, and these lasers come out and cut him into, like, werewolf meat. And it's crazy, because I was like, man, they just killed Moose. It's crazy. And, like, it turns out that, like, Betty's aunt had made up her whole reason why she hates werewolves.
Right.
So, like, she's directing the rest of Betty's family to go in and kill the werewolves.
Okay.
And that's kind of how it ends.
So it's more to become? I mean, it's, yeah, it's not a one-off?
No, it's this is issue 6.
Oh, okay.
So that's really good.
All right, excellent. And that brings us to our last book of the evening, Charlie.
Well, I want to tell you something.
Go ahead.
No, after this.
Oh, okay.
Short review.
Short review. So that brings us to our last book of the evening, Doomsday Clock.
Next last.
Number 5. Because Charles, like, I'm an ad hoc one on the end there.
Yeah.
All right, so Doomsday Clock, number 5. You know, I really enjoyed reading Watchmen back in the day.
What I was going to ask, because I haven't read any of these yet, does it read like a regular comic book, or does it read like Watchmen?
It reads a lot.
Do they seriously, like, yes, here's the main story, and then here's 6 pages of aftermath, after parts?
Yeah.
They're doing that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because at the end of this, let me show you real quick. There's like a whole...
I was going to say it's easier if you go down to a little...
Yeah, I know, but I'm about there now. it's several... Like, all right, so you got the Metahuman Menace. This is like a news special,
yeah,
and like newspaper, magazine. And then you open it up, and there's like news clippings of the rise of the Metahuman threat.
Well, they've been doing that with... all the issues so far, right?
It's not right. Just this one. No, it's not just this one. There's something from a newspaper or a TV broadcast or something
like
Watchmen. Like I said, Geoff Johns is doing his absolute very best Alan Moore impersonation on this book. The art is even in 9-panel grids, just like
Watchmen was. Yes.
Yeah, who was it? Dave Gibbons.
Yes,
Dave Gibbons. You know his original artwork on that. And so, like I said, they're doing their very, very best. The only difference is occasionally, and I say that liberally, occasionally an actual DC character shows up in the book. But for the most part, this has all been about Watchmen characters up to this point. There's been very little DC comics in it except for this issue. This issue has had more than basically any other issue so far.
Even though, like... Joker's been appearing on the front of some of the covers.
Well, he's on this one. I don't know if he's been on the front of any other ones, has he?
And then, like, Rorschach on the first issue had, like, the Trinity design in his...
Doesn't matter. They're like I said, they'll vaguely tie it to the DC Universe at the end of the issue or something. But for the most... They've been one...
This guy, who is this guy's brother, who's he secretly Batman?
There have been issues that are just character profiles.
Yeah.
Like the new Rorschach. This new Rorschach guy, who's a black guy. Not there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. He's different. The old guy was a white guy. This new Rorschach is a black guy. You get a whole...
Because Rorschach died at the end of...
Right. At the original Watchmen.
Spoilers!
Well, so... The new Rorschach, when he gets to the DC Universe, has to find Batman. Because he thinks Batman... he thinks Batman can help him, right? And so he goes to Batman... Because when him and Adrian Veidt both come to the DC Universe looking for the two smartest men on the planet, Batman and Lex Luthor. Okay? Because they're trying to find Dr. Manhattan. All right? But they came there for different reasons. For whatever reason...
You take the high road, I'll take the low.
For whatever reason, the new Rorschach came looking for Batman, actually looking for help. Adrian Veidt came to kill Lex Luthor. And I don't know why. Or if it explained why, I don't remember. That's the other problem with this book, is it's not coming out frequently enough. And I find myself, when I start to read it, going...
Which is funny, because this issue, theoretically, wasn't supposed to come out until July.
Well, still...
Because there was a posting, like... Because they went to bi-monthly.
Right. I heard 6 weeks. Is that not right?
Well, either way.
Yeah.
6 of one, half dozen of the other. It's still about 2 months.
Right.
Anyway, this one was pushed back, though. Because it wasn't supposed to solicit into July.
Mm-hmm.
But it came out this month, so...
But my point is, it's still not every 4 weeks.
But that's kind of the reason why I'm not reading it, too. Because I kind of want to get the whole story.
But... Because it's not coming out frequently enough, I find myself forgetting what happened in the last issue. So when this issue opens up and Adrian Veidt's in the hospital, I'm like, wait a minute. How'd he get in the hospital? So I had to stop.
Go back and get the
last issue and flip through it to figure out what happened. And then realizing, oh, it didn't happen in this issue. It was in the issue before that. So I had to go back and get that issue and go, oh, yeah, he tried to kill Lex Luthor.
You say go back and get that issue, but all you're doing is flip, touch... Flip.
Well, no, because I had to re-download them, because in order to save space on my iPad, I have to archive it, and then it's not on your device anymore.
Okay.
So anyway,
we all get how internet works. Thanks for explaining.
Well, I'm sorry. You're the one that made it sound like I was making it more complicated than it is. It is a thing I had to do. But anyway.
Touch one, wait 5 seconds. Touch two, wait 5 seconds.
Charlie's like, you're not a real comic book reader. Real comic book readers got paper in their hands.
And bags and boards. And I'm so sick of death bags and boards. I had a bag and board about 500 issues of Spider-Man this last week. And trust me. Here, John, pick it up.
Oh, it's heavy.
Yeah, it's heavy. Once you play with this thing for like an hour and you pick up
Wait, he's talking about the Spider-Man comic book right now.
And you play with one of the regular issues, you realize that this is a heavy book.
Once you play with this thing for 5.5 hours. Talking about comics. All right, so anyway.
I'm in a good mood. I didn't go to bed till 3 o'clock this morning.
He's slap happy is what he is. All right, so I'm sitting here reading this, and I'm not loving this as I read it. And I think back to when I read Watchmen. I was like, I read it as a trade. I didn't read it in issues because that was before my time. I mean, Watchmen came out, what?
86,
87, 88, something like that. And so I didn't read that.
It was after Crisis. In 88, I think, 88.
Something like that. And so this was before I was a heavy comic book reader. I didn't read this in issues. I read it in trade just like thousands of other people my age. And I loved it in trade because it all read together and wove a tapestry that really, really worked.
But once you read it the first time, though, you really just like, yeah, I did that. But then again, like, you go back to it like a year or two afterwards and you're like, oh my God, they did this.
Yeah, you start seeing all the little connected things that you missed the first time around.
So that's why, that's another reason, like, I kind of want to wait for it because I'm like, maybe I'll not like it at first. But then,
that's the boat I think I'm in. I think there's a very good chance that if I weren't reading this in issues and I waited for a collected edition, that it would all run together
an
much.
Omnibus.
It would all. The Doomsday Clock Omnibus. It's only $99.
Oh, but, they're like $150 now.
But it would. I think there's a good chance that it would all weave together much more nicely than it seems to be doing in issues. So that said, that's my complaint. I'm done with it now. The other question is, I'll go back to the complaint one more time, though. The other question is this is clearly Jeff Johns doing his best Alan Moore impersonation, as I said. But my question is because I'm not liking it, is it because I wouldn't have liked Alan Moore in issues? Or is it because Jeff Johns is not as good at Alan Moore as Alan Moore is? I don't know the answer to that. So we'll see. After the whole thing wraps up at the end of 12 issues, however long it takes for that to come out
next year, sometime
then we'll know more about it then. All right. So this particular issue opens up with Adrian Veidt in the hospital.
Oh, you weren't done.
I'll try to be quick.
I thought you were done.
Adrian Veidt opens up in the hospital. He didn't open up. The book opens up. His chest opens up, and there's an alien in there. The book opens up with him in the hospital. They got him in there as a John Doe. They don't know who he is because he's in the DC universe now. And he basically breaks out of the bed. They've got him handcuffed to it, the police do. He breaks out of the bed. He knocks one of the police in the head, steals their uniform, takes another police at gunpoint, and goes downstairs, goes down to the ambulance, finds his clothes, finds his cat, re-outfits himself, takes his cat, and leaves. In the meantime, Lois is trying to figure out the truth of the Superman theory. The Superman theory is this idea that says the United States in the DC universe has way more preponderance of superheroes per population, per 100 people or per 1,000 people or whatever, per capita, I guess is the right word, than any other nation on the earth. And so the question is the U.S. government doing something to create superhumans? Are they putting something in the water? Are they finding people with the metagene and triggering it in them somehow or another? And are they all part of a government program to strengthen their military? Are they all secret government agents designed to at some point make war on the Russians and things like that? And so in response to that idea, and I don't remember where the issue surfaced or who came up with the idea, but it's become popularized now. It's like a conspiracy theory that everybody's kind of going, could be true. And because of that, other countries have started training and promoting their own superheroes. And so the Russians have like a team of 12 or 15 Russian superheroes ready to defend Russia from the human, from the American imperial on threat.
Well, right? I know China now has 20.
Yeah, the Great 20 instead of the Great 10.
We are twice as better than we were last time.
That doesn't sound Chinese. I don't know.
I wasn't trying to be racist.
Yeah, it just, any accent will do. So anyway, and so
I was talking about, I was doing a Russian guy making fun of it.
Oh, okay. It's a Russian Chinese accent. Gotcha. Black Adam from Kondak has stepped up and said that any metahuman who doesn't feel welcome in his home country, they're free to come to Kondak. He will give them sanctuary.
I'm like, I'll murder all of you.
No. He wants to build his own army. And so there's clearly
an
not
army of superhumans.
Right. And so that's going on.
Well, once you enter the country of Kandak, and once you're naturally a citizen, you have to join the army.
Yeah, that's a small price to pay, right? For sanctuary? So we go back to Rorschach.
Rorschach. Well, the thing is, too, like, with Watchmen, like, the world that Watchmen existed in, the heroes weren't allowed to be heroes. So it's, I don't know how the politics work in this one that well.
Well, but here's the thing. It's, the DC Universe is a relatively stable place.
Yeah.
Despite all the costumed
crazy crap that goes on.
The costumed maniacs that are running around on the streets.
That seem to be in the New York area, that area, and somewhere in the middle of the United States. Nowhere else.
Right. But for the most part,
because DC never had the 50 states.
For the most part, the DC Universe, the world, is a stable world. Sure, there are Omega Titans that show up from time to time and try to destroy the Earth. But for the most part, the Earth is not on the verge of Armageddon the way that Alan Moore's Earth was in Watchmen.
Yeah, because it was very Cold War-centric.
Right. So, but here's the thing. Our Earth, because of this metahuman crisis, is starting to do that.
Well, it's becoming that way because...
Right. So there's people protesting in the streets. That Batman at one point starts to swing over a crowd. They grab him by the cape and pull him down and pummel him in the street.
Welcome to town, Batman.
and so countries are rising against countries. Making,
Batman, you go to town, get medicine.
You go to hell, Tonto. Or Lone Kimasabi, I'm sorry. I got my metaphor mixed up.
And yes, that was a Bill Cosby joke.
Yeah, it's a Bill Cosby joke. Don't hate us. So we're finding ourselves in our DC universe pushed to the edge of some type of terrible war or something, the way that something similar was coming in the Watchmen universe. So the idea that the Watchmen having infringed on our Earth is somewhat making our Earth more Watchmen-like.
Interesting.
At some point, this new Rorschach is hooked up with Saturn Girl. I have no idea where she came from. But she's talking about reading his mind, and she's got a Legion flight ring. Thank you. Saturn, thank you.
It's obvious, wasn't it?
If she was introduced in an earlier issue...
As plain as the nose on your face.
If she was introduced in an earlier issue, I don't remember it. And that's kind of my problem, is this book doesn't come out frequently enough for me to keep pace with it.
Yeah, you said that already.
Yeah, I'm reaffirming it. there's a lot of flashbacks to some old TV serial that Johnny Thunder is watching. Johnny Thunder's like a 102-year-old man in this. And he's watching this old TV serial. And so you get whole pages that are nothing but that TV serial. But I think that...
That's supposed to be the cartoon.
Yeah.
Black
Freighter stuff. But I don't see the metaphors clearly in it. I'm like, I don't... I'm not getting it.
Well, I never got the metaphors in the Black
Freighter. Oh, I did. That was pretty clear once you stepped back and saw the whole thing for what it was. It probably was hard to pick up on issue to issue. So Johnny Thunder... But here's the weird thing. Johnny Thunder is looking for a Green Lantern lamp. And I'm like, that's not right. Johnny Thunder is supposed to be looking for a magic lamp that he rubs and the genie comes out.
No, he had a pen.
Didn't he? I thought, who was it that had the magic lantern and the genie came out? Wasn't that? That don't sound right to me.
Alan Scott had the...
I know that. That's why I'm thinking...
But it was a magic lamp because it... Theoretically, wasn't a Green Lantern lamp.
Right, but Johnny Thunder... Anyway. But Johnny Thunder goes to Pittsburgh to look for this lamp, and I thought it was the lamp with Kazim or whatever, the genie in it. Because I thought he was... Anyway.
But he didn't have a lamp. I know that.
But when Johnny Thunder... And they clearly call this character Johnny Thunder. He gets there, he finds Alan Scott's old lamp. And then these junkies try to beat him to death over it. Because they're junkies, right? And then...
Suck your quarter and give us that lamp.
And so he ends up being saved by Rorschach and Saturn Girl. Batman has a confrontation.
John has no clue where she came from.
I really don't. Batman has a confrontation.
But to refer back, it's Saturn.
Batman has a confrontation with Adrian Veidt, and Adrian Veidt gets over on him. Find that hard to believe. Like, he's in the owl ship, and Batman's walking to him going, I can't let you do this. And basically, Adrian Veidt just rights the ship, and it flips on the side, and Batman goes, ooh, and tumbles out. I'm like, Batman, seriously? That was a real novice move, man. And that's when Batman gets caught and pummeled, and then they hand him over to the Joker.
Oh, I thought he was just swinging over the crowd and they just got him.
And so they end up handing Batman's crumpled body to the Joker. So that's, and that's kind of how the issue ends. And I'm just like, I'm having a real hard time with this. I really, really am.
Wait for it, or just not.
No, I've come this far. I'm going to read it, but. And maybe by the end it'll all make sense, but I'm having a tough time seeing it right now. All right, Charlie, that segues to the last thing you wanted to talk about at the end.
Which I read a kind of trade book.
I thought you were going to talk about Spider-Man 800.
No. Charlie, not going to be talked about.
Charlie's right? Like, God, no.
What? You mean where they turn Green Goblin into the Joker?
Oh, really?
Who turns to be the Riddler from the end of Batman Returns? Batman Forever.
So no original ideas in that book. Okay.
And Flash Thompson dies.
Ah! Dun, 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 spoilers. Dun, dun, dun. We forgot to give a spoiler warning again.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I gotta start giving spoiler warnings on the beginning of the show.
Anyway, I read this, like, trade issue thing because it wasn't an actual trade.
Right.
But there wasn't enough issues in it to be an actual trade anyway. Of Tag and Bink were here.
Ah, yes. Hasn't it been republished? Wasn't that originally come out from Dark Horse or somebody? Yes. Okay. I think I originally read that back in the day.
And it's like 5 issues long, right? So mm-hmm. And do you know why they brought this book out?
No.
You want to guess?
It's something to do with the Star Wars movies?
Yes. In particular...
Solo?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know why?
What's the connection?
Ron Howard posted a picture during filming of 2 Imperial officers that were walking around.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, are these, like, or they had, like, name tags or whatever, and one was Tag and one was Bink.
Ah.
Okay. So Dark Horse then ordered to jump on that Solo cash grab. They brought a trade out of Tag and Bink were here.
All right.
Which is a compilation of the 4-issue series that was. And I never read it before.
Right.
I knew that they're actually rebels who get, like, nixed into joining the Imperial Army.
Right.
And so they're just going through the motions. Going through the Star Wars films.
Right. And they're always at some key plot in the movies.
Yeah, for no reason.
Right.
Really. Because, like, at the beginning of the movie, like, they're on the Tantine IV, Princess Leia's ship, is driving around, and they're talking to, they see Vader come around kicking everybody's butt, so they decide to hide in this corridor.
Right.
Well, who they bump into? It's C-3PO. C-3PO's looking for R2-D2, who you see in the background getting the...
disc inserted
from Princess Leia.
Right.
And so you're like, okay, well, here's the thing, right? It's supposed to be funny.
Right.
These books. But I don't really find them funny. I mean, in the art, like, he adds, like, Mad Magazine-type jokes, like, oh, this is the Death Star, and on the 4th floor is the big boy.
Right.
And he's got, like, a big boy statue just sitting there. Like, he adds, like, a lot of that. But some of the interactions just aren't funny. And, like, they play it off like, the writer didn't know we were going to do this. Ha-ha, they died at the end of this issue. But they didn't really die because they had switched clothes with someone else. But
right.
The funny thing is, but like
I remember reading this back in the day and enjoying it to some degree.
Well, it's funny, but it's not. I think it's been hyped up by a lot of people.
It's been made more out of than it actually is. Yeah.
And it's funny because they make their way to the Cloud City, right? Because Tag is looking for Lando. Because anytime Lando lays it to the girls, his play down to the girls, he's like, well, once I fought in Tabak City or something like that, and he didn't do that. But it was Tag.
Mm-hmm.
But he was dating, like, Tag's two sisters, Lando was, right. At the time. And, like, to not get in trouble with either of them, like, he did Lando a solid.
Mm-hmm.
So Lando just stole the story. So anytime he goes up to a lady, he's like, hey, have you ever met the hero of Tabak 4 or whatever?
Right.
And like that. And that's... He goes to meet Lando because they're... I think they're trying to find a ship or something. Well, they show up like 10 minutes before Han Solo does on the Millennium Falcon with Chewie and Leia, right?
Right.
Because like they're talking like... Lando receives this communication. He's like, yeah, this guy says he's your best friend or whatever. He's landing on Launch Pad 5 or whatever. Well, they steal Boba Fett's ship.
Right.
And, like, I think Tag, like axes him for a while. And so, like, that's the reason why, like, Boba Fett was such an idiot in, like, Return of the Jedi.
Mm.
Because it's really Tag as him.
Okay.
So that's why, like, Luke knocks him out of the way. And
that's why it's so easy for them to defeat them.
So to catch him, right? So that's how they explain that. But it's funny because, like, the whole Empire... I think the Empire one was better because, like, the Empire one, it's like they're... like I said, they're doing the Lando stuff. But it's almost like they're doing the deleted scenes of everything.
Because,
like, remember when... C-3PO walks into that room and he goes, oh, hey, you, right? Well,
Imperial Stormtroopers, you're not supposed to be here. Yeah,
and it's Tag and Bink that he's talking to.
Are they the ones that shoot him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't want to have them recognize him from when they were on the Tantine 4.
Right.
And, you know, when, like, he's on Chewie's back and he's talking to the two guys behind him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's Tag and Bink, too.
Okay.
So, they get hooked up with, like, this... It turns out that there's this person following Boba Fett around, right?
Right.
And the reason that it turns out that it's, like, Boba Fett's girlfriend. They, like, had a bad date or something like that, and she wants to kill him or something like that, right? So, there's a whole thing where, like... Yeah, I'm Tag Greeley or whatever. It's my friend Bink Otanu. He's like, yeah, that's how they end up. Well, here's the thing. After the whole trilogy,
mm-hmm.
What did they do? They made the prequels.
Right.
So to explain the prequels and how Tag and Bink were in there, they were Jedis. They were born Jedis.
No.
And the way it starts out is the fact that Darth Plagueis is talking to Anakin from the opera scene from episode 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he's telling the story.
You mean Darth Sidious?
Yeah. Palpatine.
Yeah, you said Darth Plagueis.
Oh, whatever.
Anyway, all right.
He's telling him the story of Darth Plagueis. Remember,
right,
he's
right.
Like, telling him that he could affect certain things. And he tells him, well, he affected the midichlorians and some boy... born on Tatooine, and that turned out to be Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and on this other planet, he affected the midichlorians, and you see Tag and Bink as babies, so like it raised theirs for some reason,
right.
And that's why the Jedis thought that they were Jedis. So then he's like, and then further on this planet, it made this one scientist put his son in a rocket ship and escaped Earth. So he effectively makes Superman, right?
Right.
And he's like, oh, wait, that's another universe, blah, blah, blah. We're not allowed to talk about that. Well, it turns out that, like, Tag and Bink are the ones who lose the map coordinates that Obi-Wan Kenobi is looking for during episode 2, remember? Because he's like, oh, this file's missing. He's
trying to find Kamino.
Yeah, he's trying to find Kamino. Well, Tag and Bink accidentally erased it.
Ah, okay.
So they go to Jet Dexter's, like, restaurant first. And this one, like, I think the last one was the funniest one. Because it's like, you see Boba Fett and his girlfriend, they're talking in the background. And you have, like, the chef droid shouting out orders, right? Like, order 64, your food's ready. So Tag and Bink are talking to Jet Dexter, and they're like, yeah, we're sorry, we didn't mean to mess this up. Do you know how to get this? And he's like, everyone does. And he's like, really? He's like, hey, does anyone know about the Sith plan to, like, create a bunch of clones? And, like, everyone raises their hand in the bar, right? So it's like you hear in the background, yeah, order 65, your food's up. And they're just going along. And he's like, I can't believe you guys didn't know that. So all of a sudden, like, you hear in the background, order 66, your food's up. And Boba Fett, like, jumps up straight up and starts trying to kill Tag and Bink because they're in Jedi robes.
Right.
And they're like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know. I just have this sudden urge to kill people in robes like this. So they go to, episode 3, you know, the whole, like, Anakin with Padme, right?
Right.
The whole romance of episode 2 still. With the whole romance and everything. He's like, Anakin, like, sees him, like, what are you guys doing here? You all were in the Jedi Temple back then, right? He's like, yeah, yeah. He's like, I saw you, like, not following the Jedi rules there, hitting on that girl, buddy. Like, you know, when they're sitting at the palace or whatever, and they're on the balcony.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's like there's a grassy knoll, and you see Tag and Bink there, like, sitting there. It's like, what's this guy doing? I don't know. He's trying to hit on this hot, like, governor from this hot queen or whatever. So, like, they start, like, Anakin asks him for, like, help. And he's like, well, you know what you should do? You should play aloof and then use your Jedi powers for no reason. So he basically reenacts the whole, like, dinner scene.
Right.
Like, he's telling Anakin that's exactly what he should do.
So that's where he got the idea for it. Yeah.
And then it goes to him, like, they find him later on, like, episode 3, like, when he kills the younglings and he's about to kill them. But like I said, the prequels, like, were the best Tag and Bink stuff. I thought that was when they hit their comedy, like, troop there.
Right.
That was great. Like I said, Order 65.
Well, that would make Tag and Bink really old, though, wouldn't it?
Well, no, not really.
Because, I mean, how old were they in these prequel ones?
Well, yeah, but then again, it's Star Wars.
It's
but
a
what
joke.
I'm saying, it's they're two joke characters or whatever in.
Right, I'm
the
just saying
anyway.
And
they were just saying, like, how would Tag and Bink be in these prequels? You know, because at the end of every issue, they basically get killed.
Right.
Because then, like, they're eaten by the Sarlacc.
Right.
You know, like, one of them's eaten by the Sarlacc, which they're on this, like, this stick that's falling down the Sarlacc's throat, and it, like, goes like that a couple times. And then all of a sudden, Boba Fett does actually fall in there. He's got the jetpack, and they steal the jetpack, and they escape that way.
Right.
Which that was kind of stupid, because that was what they did after the prequel one. Like, they were like, hey, remember that Return of the Jedi one we did? We're going to take this one scene that we already did earlier. I think, like I said, I think they were trying to drag out the joke.
Right.
But it just didn't work then.
Yeah, but I remember reading that back in the day and enjoying it then. So,
like I said, it's not bad. It's just, I don't think they really hit the comedy until the prequel stuff.
Right.
But then again, they were making fun of bad movies, so.
That's always helpful. Yeah.
No, no. Show her your dark side. And, like,
All right, so that's it for this week's reviews. We'll be back in just a moment to close the show, close the show out. So we'll be back in just a second.
I understand that Thanagarians are stronger than humans. I wonder, how long will you last under my tender care?
Knock yourself out, jerkhole.
A little rude, darling, don't you think?
Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. We are getting ready to close the show out. We just want to remind you of a few things real quick.
There were spoilers in this podcast.
there were some spoilers. So if you're listening to the end first, beware. We appreciate you being with us this week. We hope you enjoyed the show. We want to remind you real quick that you can check us out on our webpage. It's not actually a webpage for the show so much as it's just a page that showcases our feed and where you can download episodes. And that's over at the Podomatic site, www.arnetcast.podomatic.com. So check that out over there. Send us an email if you would like. We would love to hear from you. I checked the email before the show started tonight, and we had no emails from fans.
Hmm.
Boo! So please.
Even though he who shall not be named said he was going
to. He said he was going to email us, and he did not. So email us, please, at alternaterealitypodcast@gmail.com. All one word, no spaces, dashes, or anything like that, periods. Just alternaterealitypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on iTunes. Go over there to iTunes if you would. We would really, really appreciate it now that we're listed over there. Search for, I think we're listed under Games and Hobbies or whatever the subsection is. But you have to scroll way down to find us because we're just newly back on the listing. So instead, just search for Alternate Reality, and when you do that, we should come up like right number one, first choice. And so when you find us there, please leave us a high-rated review, 5 stars, 4 or 5, 5 preferably, and write us a review that says nice things about us. We would super appreciate that. That raises our profile on the iTunes search so that more people can find us and like us and try us out. That would mean a lot to us. You can catch us on social media. Twitter is probably our home that we're on most of the time. Twitter.com/AR_podcast for the show itself. Twitter.com/JohnLoveless for me. /XOnslaught for Charlie. We have a Facebook page. Search for us over on Facebook, Alternate Reality Podcast. You should be able to find that page. Or you can search for me and Charlie individually. We do not have secret hidden accounts, so you should be able to find us.
Sometimes I wish I did.
And Alternate Reality is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check out the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcasts.com. We talked about Solo last week. Go back and listen to that if you've not had a chance to. And then we'll be back next week to talk more about comics. So in the meantime, my name is John.
I'm Jolly.
And we're out. You guys have a good night.